Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Paul, and today's episode is Brothers Keep, the flashback episode. We get the backstory for many, many, many of our main characters before their lives at Fox River.
This was actually one of my favorite episodes of the show ever. Do you remember when you first read the script for this? Because I didn't know it was coming.
So no. I don't remember it, but I remember that, and we're lucky that today we have Greg Yatanis on, who directed this episode, because when you throw a flashback episode at nine actors in the 16th episode of a show, where they've been playing characters, and they say, this is how you got here, and this is who you were, you're going to get, I can't imagine, I remember the discussions amongst the cast. I cannot imagine what it was like for the writers and the producers and the directors, so.
Yeah, I mean, I end up having to do quite a lot of homework for this episode because I discovered I was a junkie.
You did not know you were an addict previously?
I had pitched them a drinking problem. And Paul was like, I'll see your drinking problem and I will raise you some heroin. I actually had, I gave myself homework. And I think actually Greg and I talked about it. I read Junkie, the Williams S. Burroughs book on heroin addiction. And I actually watched Requiem for a Dream, which to this day is the hardest movie I've ever had to watch. It felt like being punched in the face.
That's a rough one.
Brilliant, but painful. Okay,
brilliant.
So let's get to the index that we can bring on our wonderful guest.
Great. The Calestine Index for episode 116, Brothers Keeper. Brothers Keeper premiered on April 3, 2006, was written by Zach Estrin and directed by our guest today, Greg Yatanis. 8.10 million people tuned in that Monday night at 8 o'clock. And also, at that time, we were up against a rerun of Wife Swap on ABC, a rerun of Two and a Half Men on CBS, and Deal or No Deal on NBC.
The TVGuide.com recap reads, a flashback episode reveals details about the crime that landed Link on death row, explains Michael's motives for helping his brother, and looks at reasons why other characters wound up at Fox River. For Sarah, the road began in a hospital's drug dispensary. Sucre needed a wedding ring for Mary Cruz. C-Note got a taste of military injustice, and T-Bag found love for a while.
Around the world at that time, on April 3rd, for the first time since its independence from Britain in 1931, women in Kuwait were permitted to vote and run for office. And of the turnout that day, over half of the voters were women.
Also, ladies.
Netflix launched its lawsuit against Blockbuster, claiming infringements on its patent rights, saying that Blockbuster copied its patent-based business methods.
Moving on to pop culture, top of the movie box office was Spike Lee's Inside Man, starring Denzel Washington.
One of my all-time faves, by the way.
It's amazing. Denzel Washington and Jodie Foster, fantastic film. It grossed $29 million in its opening weekend, which feels like a low opening weekend now, but hashtag inflation, I suppose. Gnarls Barkley's song Crazy was climbing the charts off an album that would win the 2007 Grammy for Album of the Year. And this I knew nothing about, but I'm just so excited about it. On MTV, Wilmer Valderrama hosted a brand new show called Yo Mama, featuring amateur comedians in head-to-head battles telling the most creative and hilarious insult jokes. Paul, when we are done with this show,
we must do
a rewatch of Yo Mama because I've never heard of it, but I'm all in.
How about instead we just go watch the episode and we replay our highlights from that, and then we can get to interviewing Greg.
Good idea. Here we go.
This is really a stupid, but you're going to say it's not stupid, which is one of the reasons I love you. We need to write a phonetic pronunciation of my last name. I don't think that Michael and Veronica could have children because their eyes would be so bright that, like, people would be blinded by looking at them.
It's a good director who looks at an actor's hands. Oh.
I'm seeing this really cute drug addict.
Also, I feel a little bad for this actor. This is like a whole audition, and we only get her face for like 30 seconds.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their Essential Prenatal Multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome back, everyone. Our guest today has won Emmys for directing episodes of both House and House of the Dragon. His career is massive and impressive, and we'll just give you some highlights, but he started on Soldier Fortune back in the 90s. Directed, oddly, an episode of The Invisible Man, also called Brother's Keeper, and has worked on Bones, Grey's Anatomy, did 30 episodes of House, 20 of Banshee.
Jesus.
It goes on and on and on.
And we loved him. He was one of our favorites. Don't tell the other directors. He did 3 episodes of Prison Break, including some serious torture scenes between Paul and I in season 2. Greg, welcome to Prison Breaking.
Thank you. How cool you guys are having this. Yeah. I think I texted you day that the press article came out.
You did.
What
am I?
I think you're at the top of our list of, okay, who are we going to have on this show? We have to have Yatanis.
Well, it's one of...
was super exciting.
It is, you know, across all that. Thank you for that lovely intro and for having me today. And across, I would put Brother's Keeper in my top 10 of all the episodes I've directed, for sure. And it's like, it's
really?
Always... Yeah. I mean, you know, when I got the script for this, I was already a fan. I wanted to do the Prison Break pilot. I was already watching the show. I loved the show. I like specifically wanted to get on the show. And then when I, as a guest director, you parachute in and you don't know what your script's going to be until the night before you start work. Mm-hmm. And that script came in and I was so excited. Like this Genesis pilot of like how everybody got to where they went, and that drops you on the doorstep of the beginning of pilot episode.
Yeah, you kind of got your pilot in a way.
Yeah, I did. It's like how Spider-Man became Spider-Man, you know? Like I wanted to know like how all this worked. And what was interesting was you guys shot the pilot in the spring and we had to marry into certain costumes and things to track. It was minus 28. I remember being the van scene with you and, you know, that guy that plays C-Note's brother-in-law, Mike Jones, that day, you know, like that. I still tell the story of like that day when that guy was supposed to be on set and at call time, like is nowhere to be found. And after finding his, he was a rapper. You know, he hadn't done, this was one of his first acting jobs. And he,
oh God, I remember.
We got
this.
His manager and his thing. And we're in Chicago and nobody's awake. And we finally get somebody. And he never got on his plane from Texas. He was still in Texas.
Yeah.
We were like at call. And he was in the first scene of the day, which and it was minus 28 degrees. So when we got, we had to, you know, think on our feet and change kind of the geography, like that whole scene where he takes him outside. That whole thing where he just where Sino comes back and says that he's going, he's being deployed again, had a whole different kind of physical structure and blocking to it.
Wow.
To get around.
But you had to shoot it without the actor.
We had to shoot it. We had to work. We had to kind of organically figure out how to make the scene work. You don't notice it, but I remember that day, and I remember you and I being in the van doing that scene by the park, like. Could not have been, I've never been so cold in my life during that show.
I don't think and I grew up there, and I don't think I've ever been that cold in my life either. It was, I also remember, it was like, did you shoot over Christmas break? Like, did you start before Christmas break and finish after or something? Or maybe it was just my Christmas break, but I remember that was, it was very late at night, and it was a Friday.
Yeah.
And we were shooting, and I tell this story all the time because
always fun.
Now we're working on digital, but we were working on film that at one point you were shooting us in the van and the film snapped from the hold. And they reloaded it and it snapped again. And then you guys were like, that's it, we're going home. Like, we can't, we can't keep it going. And I was like, well, that is a first.
Yeah.
I mean, it was well below zero.
No, it was, I asked this question, the crew will shut down at minus 30. But I can't imagine minus 28 feels that much different than minus 30.
No.
And then when it got to zero, I could have walked around in shorts. Like, at one point, I went to, like, North Face, and they had this thing that, like, was a full onesie that you could get. It was, like, a basically, like, a sleeping bag. I came so close to getting that because I grew up on the East Coast. I grew up around the cold. But you realize, you know, I would go from, like, I'd walk to school, or I'd go to the bus, or I'd go from here to there. You don't, like, stand outside for 14 hours. In that way.
Yes. Because we were noticing as we were watching it, I mean, your episode is 100% location, right? Like, I mean, it must be really interesting to get a script and be like, oh, I'm excited to work on Prison Break. Kidding. I'm okay.
Right. Yeah.
But you were not ever in Fox River.
No, once.
And I remember.
Once, right.
Also, when we, I'm looking at the monitor, and Sarah, actually, you commented, you're like, it's so cool that it's just white behind you. We were actually in the cell block. I remember it was the first day I met Greg, and he was like, okay, just looking at the monitor and just like blowing out the light in back. It was a very creative way to shoot that. Because it doesn't need to be in any particular place, but it was like, I was like, oh wow, I get to shoot in the cell block. Not that you'd know that that's where it was. So you had to do, I would imagine on a show like that with a relatively tight timeline, this has to have more locations than any other episode of the show by far.
That was the biggest, the like logistical thing. One of the great things about Chicago was you could, you know, on a short walk, go to a whole different kind of look. But like when we were, you know, where we had T-Bag's love interest, she did a really beautiful job. I was trying to look up what her name was.
KK Dodds. I knew her from way back.
Yeah, she was great. And, you know, that house was around. Like, you could go out of that house and there was the alleyway where Sucre was. And so we would find multiple looks without having to move around very much because, yeah, we shot that in 8 days, you know, and it was a...
Yeah, it's incredible.
And you shot Kuwait.
Yeah, where was
shot
that?
Kuwait. So there's stock footage mixed with building a tent on stage. So all the... part of it was in Fox River when he's coming down the hallway and seeing the guy tortured.
Tortured, sure, because he's in a prison cell.
We did the tents on stage and opened them up and blasted the sun and did some heat, you know, mirage ripples. You know, we put the flame bar in front of the camera to kind of sell that look and see that story.
It really works. And of course, the actor in me just sees the, oh, no, he has no facial hair. On C note, oh, he has no, like Nepper or T-Bag, oh, he has no facial hair in this. Like, that's always the thing you got to put in the schedule, too. It's like, when are we shooting these guys so they can be ready for the next episode or for whatever.
It was so great.
And it's continuity.
It's super effective. I mean, the snap
looks
from
so
Chicago, which looks just so cold. I mean, the breath disappears so fast. And then to cut to Kuwait, you really felt the difference. The sweat was great. The, like you said, the weight and heat was great. It really sold.
Those things were, you know, Scott,
feels huge.
Scott Eilers edited, and he and I, like, he was so excited to get the footage. And, you know, it was temped. It's funny, it was temped. I saw, it was nice to hear the music had followed some of the temp, but it was a lot of, there was a lot of gravity around the episode. You know, like it was important. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It had an opportunity to be stylistically different. It's funny, when I was watching it and I was remembering that I like lamented after I wrapped that I didn't, when to your point about shaving, I should have had a scene with Michael shirtless, because you had only ever seen him in his tattoos. And there was opportunities when he was working the crazy wall to have him shirtless, you know, looking over the material or something.
But you know, there's
Sarah noticed. Yeah, Sarah commented.
His sleeves are rolled up.
Yeah.
And it was sort of wonderful because you see his bare arm, but you didn't make a meal out of it. It was just, this is the guy before the thing. And it, I mean, it stood out to me all these years later.
Greg, you have such a calm, you as a director and as a man, you have such a calm way about you. And it, you know, it's an intense show, and it was an intense group of actors playing intense. I mean, this episode is not just a flashback. Here's what happened, how you got here, but everybody has some kind of turn that is like an enormous moment in their life. They're getting engaged, they're getting arrested, they're a drug addict, they're all these things. I would imagine that the amount of energy coming towards you from the actors needing answers, essentially, must have been overwhelming. So my question is, Zach Estrin, who wrote it, and Olmsted and Schuring, who were, I guess, running it at the time, were they involved in those conversations with the actors? Were you the first line of information there? Because, you know, like you said, you come and hit the ground running. It's not your show. You haven't been there. You don't have these relationships. How did you deal with that kind of onslaught?
I think, you know, if I remember correctly too, I think there's, I really do try to kind of calibrate my compass to the people that I'm working with and see what are the needs of me. That's what I think made me a successful episodic director, was I understood I was making, you know, 1/22nd of the bigger, you know, piece, and how to be able to show up and let them worry about the next thing that was coming down. And so I was so excited when I had read this and then, you know, really met Zach, got on, you know, like house on fire, just got like, it was great. And there was
he's so lovely.
It really was, like, you know, and we'll talk more about Zach in a little, you know, and it's, I think, you know, the secret sauce of what made that work was a willingness to listen to ideas and be able to bring ideas to the table. And interestingly, I think it's sometimes what was easier about this than other episodes is there was none of the relationships and history and what's already been established to work from. Everything was new, and you were dealing with, you know, human relationships and stories, and we could take things as they were happening. And I thought the relationships were pretty clear. There was, you know, when I was working with Nepa, he was, when Bob was, you know, when we were working on that scene, you know, we worked out little, because I had also been watching the show. I think that's important as a director. You need to be as caught up with a show as possible. And there was only, you know, I think, episode 13? There was like, I saw as much as I could.
It was episode 16, but 16. I'm sure they hadn't cut together 13, 14, 15. I was able to,
but again, I didn't need the last few episodes to know where to drop in because it was all fresh. But
right.
I remember Bob, there was a great scene where Teabag, when he's teaching the multiplication game and the little girl like kind of moves his finger down and you just see him like look, and you just, you know, I remember talking to Bob then in the slightest of way that activates for him, that his, you know, proclivities and such. And we could just see that even if he has a kind of lid on the monster right now, that it was like kind of like a doorbell to it. And so Sarah, like our conversation about, like, it was just, you were ready to dive in. I think when people are game, Like, there was nothing more fun. Like, you were game and you were ready to talk about it and to talk about, like, and you, like, in watching that performance and your pale skin and, like, and Joe was in it, who I've worked with since a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Terrific actor.
I totally forgot that Joe was in that and, like, was your boyfriend. So, mm-hmm. But it was great. It was just great to see that you dove in at first. Everybody did.
But there was, I mean, first of all, I think for a lot of us, there was a it was such a new kind of work for the show, which was wonderful. You know, like, I was, Paul and I talk about this a lot. I was kind of on my own show with Wentworth. We were in, like, a two-person romantic drama up in the thing. And now all of a sudden there's this backstory, which is really cool. But it also was a contentious episode. I mean, I remember, and I don't know how much of this, I went through my script. I have the pink pages and a couple of things that stood out. I remember there being a big controversy, and I don't know if this was involving you or just the writers, but about a kiss between Michael and Veronica and the implication that he didn't pick up the phone because he was sleeping with Lincoln's ex-girlfriend. And there was a huge, like, that was the, in the original draft.
I remember
she stumbles in. They kiss, and I think it was like clothes start coming off, and then we're close up on a phone that Michael doesn't answer. And I know there were a lot of really strong feelings from Wentworth and Dominic, and I think even Robin, although I don't remember that as well, mm-hmm. about, like, hold on. If this whole thing is being done out of the guilt of I slept with your girlfriend, it feels much cheaper than it does if this is being done out of you put your life on the line to borrow money so that I could have a better life.
Yeah.
That the nobility, and that was always in there, but the nobility of that untainted by, you know, I was also.
Great is that was addressed ahead of shooting. Like, when it's the day of,
okay.
those conversations happen, are horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't know, and there, what's great is there was an opportunity to bring up the life insurance, to be able to make it a deliberate switch rather than, you know, being there on stage and paralyzed because nobody wants to do the scene because this has just finally hit somebody. And by the way, it was a great note and great ideas come. And what was why I came back every year was that it's an environment that you can collaborate in. I think that's what you know, you want. So sometimes I've been really lucky that I haven't been on a show where it's just like, you know, you're the guest director and, you know, I'm this. I've heard about those shows. I've managed to avoid, you know, those kind of situations. And Prison Break was always collaborative, especially when you then have the trust of everybody after doing Brothers Keeper to come back and to come back. I think that was, you know, great. Unfortunately, I didn't like, I was looking to see if I had photos. I think I had the iPhone when, like, I did my second episode in Texas. So I had, like, photos with Wentworth and stuff on set. My sister came down to set, and then I remember the next time I came back, I have photos of Jody and Dom and everybody. You know, I think the other thing is everybody's, you know, pressure testing you a little bit. I remember Dom being the most, you know, one to see what I would do, you know, would try to throw things in my lap. And Chris Manley shot that, and we stayed close after we worked together a couple of times.
Chris is terrific, DP.
Yeah, he was great.
Did you have a writer? Was there a writer on set? Because I don't remember Prison Break doing that, actually. Was Zach there? Was Paul there?
Zach was there when we were in Texas, I remember, because he wrote my next episode as well. Or he was at least down there as producer. I don't feel like Zach was there. He might have come in, but I don't I don't have a memory of that, but I have a lot of, you know, sort of memory of conversation and texting and staying in touch about it. And he was, you know, super supportive. I think us too, I think everybody was also, like, excited to be out of the prison, you know, for something. So it was, like, kind of a, you know, like, recess for everybody. So everybody came in really wanting to do a good job and to be able to have great material to sink their teeth into. I mean, Zach wrote a great script with great dilemmas. And watching it, I was impressed with its efficiency, like, how it covered so much. You never, like, if this was the pilot to Prison Break, it was great. I remember, you know, even down to, you know, I remember, you know, talking to Wendt about how to handle that last scene, you know, and that I didn't want to see his face. when I shot, just him walking up to the guns and pausing, because you would know when you see him putting on the suit from the pilot and see the two guns, you know, that that would be enough. I got some guff that there wasn't a shot because they wanted to cut to his face, but I think I think the cinema of it played perfect how it was.
Now, I noticed, looking at my little pink pages here, there's a scene, and I can't remember if you shot it or if it was cut before. The teaser of this episode was a flashback to young Lincoln, young Michael, young Veronica.
Yes, we shot
Michael and Lincoln being kicked out of their house. Okay, so you want to just set the scene a little bit in terms of what that scene was.
I know that we did it because that's where the flashes were taken from that happened.
Right, in the court.
In the court.
Of course, yeah,
so courthouse. That's what became of that. But I remember shooting, you know, with young everybody, but I did not remember that. I don't remember the specific construct around that deleted scene.
And the boys were cast already because there was like the lakefront scenes earlier in the season. I don't know if there was a Veronica cast, but you must have cast that, yeah.
Yeah, because it starts with two boys, 11 and 15. And what's interesting about it is it sets up, so it starts with Michael and Lincoln at 11 and 15 hiding in like a room. Mm-hmm. And then you realize they're at Veronica's house. They don't have any place else to go. And she's arguing with her dad about like, no, let them stay. And he's like, they're not our problem. And then he goes, I'm going to call social services. And Link goes, come on, Mike, we're not going to a foster home. And it's really interesting because it sets up this dynamic between the three of them.
Yeah.
Also incredibly hard to do that kind of work with young actors who've really only done one scene together. But I'd forgotten all about it. And I flipped to the first pages of my episode and I was like, oh, I didn't remember it from the cut, so I wasn't sure if you'd cut it or.
No, I remember. No, I think it was. You know, I turned in a pretty hearty director's cut. I think there's some other stuff that either was tightened or not there because
it's a 54-page script.
Yeah, and it came out. I would not be surprised if the director's cut was close to that length of time. Like it was all in there.
Yeah.
I remember when I put it on a couple of days ago that I was surprised at how it opened, and I'm like, but I was like, I don't remember that being. Just because I'm always looking for like what's the way into the episode, and I think I might have approached, you know, Lincoln, who again had to be like at minus 20 degrees in a t-shirt and a leather jacket, and he actually Dom added that line where he's like how you doing, Lincoln? And he's like, cool, you know, like it was that was real, and but there's the he walks out of that scene and he goes onto the stage to his set where the goons are pressuring him. But Dom's like, I'm going to chew gum in this scene. And I'm like, you can't chew gum in this scene because we just saw you on the other side of the door. And it's, no, man, I could have put it in at the door. I'm like, you can't chew this scene. Like, those are what I was talking about when I was like, that was like my first day with him. And he was testing me with, he was like, gum's real life, man. I'm like, I'm with you. We could totally do it if we just didn't see you on the other side of that door, which we just did, and you weren't chewing gum.
Right.
Like, we should have done it outside
immediately
with the scene with Lincoln. But yeah, gum's real life, man. So I think sometimes I will text that to each other. But it was, you know, just like you, it's always that negotiation. I think that is the tricky part of being a guest director is that you want to respect the customs and the culture of where you're visiting. But you're also sort of the visiting dignitary and your title comes with certain authority. So you're balancing, asserting that authority and having to lead the crew because they want to be led and actors want to be directed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can do your best and you're going to grind a little bit. And on shows, you're going to find people that just don't want the input, you know, and I just try to be there in audience. I also like respect when somebody doesn't want the input. I can only do so much and it's. And just one of the more freeing aspects of it is like, if we want to play and talk and build and try ideas, like we're going to have a great time. If we want to dig in and, you know, have that be there, it's not, the ideas don't flow. You know, I think that it's all about like what we can do together and how we can try to solve it together. And I love like, you know, and especially with TV and especially the schedule, there wasn't a lot of time. Like one of the things I really was very happy with when I saw it and was glad that I still regarded it so well was like how well everybody dropped in. Like, I really think, like, you know, your Sarah's junkie storyline was fantastic. Like, shooting up in the hospital was great, you know, kind of like being like, you know, dealing with that, the scene with the guy that got hit by the car and just that paralysis in that moment that led to her sobriety. I thought all of that read so well and played so well. Like, I was like I was watching it, like, well, I wouldn't do anything different with so many of these scenes. Mm.
That's cool. I mean, what was interesting to me, if I'm remembering right, you were the first director in my career, which at that point was very short, who called me before we started shooting and was like, hi, my name is Greg. I'm going to be directing the next episode. Want to talk to you about some of these scenes. And my, like, little theater geek heart was like, oh my God, I found my people.
And
it was beautiful for me too, because, like, I mean, I joke that I'm the only member of the Screen Actors Guild who's never seen a line of cocaine. Like, I don't know drugs. I just don't. I grew up in a household in chaos, and the idea of adding more chaos into my life, just never. I was like, no. And so I'm reading these scenes and I was like, I don't know how to do this. And I found a piece of paper where, you know, I think you were the one that suggested, like, read Junkie, watch Requiem for a Dream. Yeah. And it was super helpful. It was super helpful. And I remembered something watching it, that when I was in grad school, you know, we all drank a bit too much because we were theater geeks, and there was a theater bar where we basically drank for free. And I was in school in Denver, and I remember getting behind the wheel of my car thinking, I probably shouldn't be driving, but there's a blizzard and I got to get home. And I'm driving home through Denver, and out of nowhere, a block from my house materializes a family of four in the street. And you can't slam on your brakes. They got out of the way. And I remember parking my car and I was like, well, that's it. That's it. Yeah. I'm never in my life. Like, that was my one gift from the universe or God or my ancestors or whatever you believe in. That was your congratulations. You didn't just kill a family of four moments. And I remember you kind of digging around with me as we were talking on set about, like, what is this moment? This moment where you see there's a right and a left.
Yeah.
But you're taking one of those paths. And in the hands of a director who was more interested in the shot list than the performances, I think this would have been a very different episode. So, you know,
I agree. I think one of the pleasures is when you can, and actually, you know, I would credit this episode too for what kind of genre pieces I pursued going forward, because there was, you know, a sense of community and family to the story. And I look for those themes, House of the Dragon being a perfect example. You know, there's at the very basis of that, you know, I could understand Viserys' story because, you know, I was single dad to a daughter. And so was he. You know, forget the dragons, forget the palace, forget the thing, the very human nature of it. And still yet, like, I think, you know, getting to work with cast and still have the genre moments and the visual moments of his architecture firm and some of the things that I thought really still looked really great, you know, all these years later is exciting, but they don't have to come at the expense of the other. I think, you know, it's and one of the things I love in that scene when the guy gets hit by the car and you make that choice, like, Joe pulls you away and then you kind of turn around and kind of fall to your knees, like it really hits you. Like, I like they could have easily, I'm glad the producers didn't cut out, like, stayed with you on that. Like, that's an important, that was a moment. And when you turn in your director's cut and leave, just because that's the way the process works, you hope for the best. And I think everybody, I remember Scott, the editor, was also like throwing himself on the, you know, like, you can't cut this or you can't change this part or this thing would go. So he was a real advocate in my absence. And I would check in to see kind of, you know, how the cut was coming. It was one of the times where I stayed in touch with Post, and Post was really receptive, just showing me the progress of the cuts, because I wanted to be able to, you know, defend, you know, or explain why something was important. And I think, and we had that kind of dialogue on that show.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
All right, welcome back, everyone.
When you are talking to the producers and the writers about this, so before you're dealing with the cast, before you're even designing your days and all that thing, Sarah and I both remarked about how strong the connective tissue of theme is in this episode, that it's not just the backstory of, oh, all these people hit rock bottom, or all these people by the wheels of the universe ended up being in each other's lives because of mistakes they'd made, but so much of what's motivating them is family.
Yeah.
Obviously, Lincoln and obviously
the right thing by family.
And Lincoln and Michael, C-Note, even Teabag to a certain degree, there is this sense,
Sucre, yeah,
although insane as it may be, that he had an opportunity in his own twisted mind of having a family. Mm-hmm. You know, where he said, I love, like, that maybe there was this way. And it really comes across. And is that something that you just took from the script on its face? Was it conscious? Obviously it was conscious on the writer's part, but was it communicated directly to you? Like, Sarah's directed, I've directed now. And, you know, sometimes you sit in a tone meeting with the writers and producers and they just say, make sure this scene is scary, make sure this scene is sexy. And they don't give you this larger sense and that's for you to pull out. Was that something that was conscious? Consciously discussed?
I feel like, not necessarily. I do think that often tone meetings are done scene to scene, sometimes not.
Yeah.
Holistically, those are the questions I'm asking. Like, what are we trying to accomplish here? What's the story you're really wanting to tell? And I think I felt, or what I grabbed onto, was, I love, and again, it's what I would continue to chase in Quarry, same thing. It's like, I'm interested in marriages, even the show I just did for Apple, Presumed Innocent, like what a family does in peril or in crisis and how people react. Like, I'm like infinitely fascinated by those areas. And this was, this was the tipping point of crisis for everybody's relationships and what could survive that. And what do you have to do to survive? And how, I was actually really moved by Rockman's speech to Mike Jones about, like, like, she married a military man. Like, how long is she going to stay if I'm just, one of them, that I'm just a criminal. And being in those places, plus everybody, rose up to play that and came ready with ideas, which is also great, but in the tone meeting specifically, I feel like a lot of stuff is like plot or sort of what they hope to accomplish. And I feel like some of those conversations were more just kind of ongoing with me and Zach, because we were in touch a lot during that episode.
Sure.
And then, of course, talking to the cast and trying to get a little bit of a head start before we got there on the day and just, make that go as smooth as possible. Plus, you're flying to location, you're in a hotel, it's freezing, I have to tell you, on a production level, to you guys as the directors, one thing I learned that I've taken with me since is never go from cold to warm. When we went from shooting the alleyways outside or doing all the stuff with Sucre and the proposing and all that, and then went inside to Teabag's house, like, everybody couldn't activate. Like, they were like,
I mean, fell asleep.
Like, we had just rescued them.
Oh, wow.
Like, they were inside. They're like,
right.
nobody could do anything. Like an hour was lost just trying to get people to like be like, okay, I'm not dead. I'm like, my body's warming up. So go
right.
from
yeah.
go from oh, warm that's... to cold. I would have in
I like that tip. So,
I would have reversed that day 100%. There was no reason to not be able to. So it was I would have 100% done that.
That's a really good tip.
I would think my instinct would say absolutely the opposite, which is like, here's your motivation. Like you could let's power through this so we get to go inside.
It was more the crew. It's just like it was.
Yeah, I know. People would just fall asleep.
Yeah, it just was.
Well, because the exhaustion of trying to do your job outside. I mean, I remember we shot a scene on a jetty that's coming up in a couple episodes, and I mean the scene couldn't be 60 seconds long.
Right.
But standing outside, you know, with waiting to shoot it, whatever, we were probably out there for an hour. I took like a 6-hour nap when I got home because your whole body is going, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, I'm going to die.
Yeah. It's exhausting.
True.
It's crazy.
So true.
Greg, what was the architecture firm? What building was that? I was trying to identify it.
We were trying to figure that out.
It was a cool
those
space.
Crazy window, those crazy
round
like,
windows.
They almost look like submarine windows. Yeah.
Yeah.
When they showed me that building, I loved it. I loved the two levels. I loved that there was already kind of an existing firm and desks and things were already there. Like we were going to somebody else's office situation. And I could see a lot of, again, to sort of mirror this very structured life, you know, when Wentworth shows up with his like earmuffs and his coat for scene,
beautiful camera.
Yeah. I thought all that would lend itself to, again, like anywhere I could tell in his story that this guy, that he was about to do, that for him to do something this crazy and to get this far out of his comfort zone. And, to that end, like I love that when we had the, you know, that his architect, it was so clever that his architect firm was the one that was, you know, had the designs for Fox River and trying to like, you know, first plan to try to memorize everything. And then I remember weirdly when I was watching it, I was like, oh, I really remember that scene when the girl comes with the food delivery and has all the tattoos, you know, and he's like checking it. It's like, it's all sort of the wheels are starting to turn and how to do that, you know? So
there's beautiful moments throughout about this sort of random things that happen that land you where you are. I mean, even Lincoln running by Sucre.
Yeah, I love that.
And
I love the little
hitting him in the thing. The sense that like it could so easily have gone otherwise.
Yeah.
Any of these little moments could have pivoted things.
100%.
I had a question for you. I've been trying to do some dates on this. Were you shooting when the Golden Globes were announced? Was that during your episode?
That was the day, that was the Gums Real Life day. Wentworth had a Globe nomination and it like kind of threw a whole cultural.
And so did the show.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
You know, like I remember that day. I remember that exact day. I remember that morning.
What was nominated? Wentworth and the show?
Yeah, the show was nominated for Best Drama.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out years later that there's always one season, one show nominated for Best Drama at the Golden Globes.
Oh, really?
And like, a buddy of mine, Adrian Pazdar, was like, yeah, we got it our first year on Heroes. Like, there's always one show that's one breakout show.
We had that on House of the Dragon. We had season one. We won the Globe for season one.
Yes, you did.
We did not win. But I wonder, I apologize because I threw a little tiny party, but I don't remember if we invited you because you were
a
guest director.
I'm not going to know that guy in 10 years. It's not going to be on my podcast someday.
Yeah.
I apologize.
What's a podcast?
I just invented it.
We went to, and I had this thing, I mean, Paul and I have talked about this. I had this thing where I was like, I'm going to create community because I've come off this show where there was a lot of antagonism. And I was like, no, I want this to be a family.
Mm-hmm.
It did not work as well on Prison Break as I wanted it to, but I still gave it the old college try. And I called the House of Blues because I'd heard that they had a private room. And I was like, can we get your private room for the night? And the guy was like, who is this? I was like, we were just nominated for a Golden Globe. I'd like to have a place that we could all hang out. But Wentworth and Dom had already gotten pretty freaking famous. And so you couldn't just go to a bar with them.
Right.
And so we went to, and Kevin Hooks was relatively new to the show. He'd done a handful of episodes. And I remember I think it was just actors. And towards the end of it, Hooks showed up And it was a really nice night. Like, it was still that, like, oh my God, you guys, people are watching the show. Oh my God, you guys, we got nominated for an award. And it was an award I'd heard of.
right.
Years later for Walking Dead, I got nominated for like 6 awards I'd never heard of. I was like, yeah. The Scream Awards? Like, what is this? But I'd heard of the Golden Globes. And Hooks walked in and we're like, a producer just walked in the door. And Amaury and I looked at each other and I was like, you're thinking what I'm thinking. And God love him, we left him with the bill.
No.
Put Hooks on the hook.
And we're like,
oh my goodness.
You gotta have a corporate credit card. And he was like, is this up? And I was like, come on, you can produce us a party. He's like,
all right. Season one, come on. Party.
Yeah. Gary
Back
Brown
when producers
loved getting that receipt.
Yeah.
Well, especially because it was for a bunch of booze for actors, which I guess you can't do anymore.
Oh my God.
But it was, I mean, you really were there at a pivotal time, right? I mean, because it's a moment where.
Yeah, I do. But I was not at your party. No, I was not invited. But
I apologize retroactively.
It's okay.
15 years later, or 2019.
I would have gone too, because I was shooting, but I probably would have come by, see what was going on.
I have so many recollections from that party. Not that it didn't get crazy or anything, but I just remember things that I probably wouldn't discuss. I mean, I guess we can discuss and cut them out. I get to edit this thing anyway. But I remember Marshall announcing that he was getting married or had gotten married by jumping out of an airplane.
That's right. We got to ask Marshall about that when he comes on. That's
I remember
right. Jumped out of a plane.
Wife, maybe now ex-wife, mm-hmm. showing us her new Rockman tattoo, which was enormous and across her lower back.
Oh.
And that's a lot of letters. And then like 2 weeks later being like, oh yeah, it's not working out. And being like, oh, what about, I just wanted to be like, oh, what about the tattoo?
I also remember her being one of the most beautiful men I'd ever met. Like she and Josh, my husband and the two of them, the four of us went out one night, like to dinner and bowling or something. You know, it was like, we're in Chicago, we don't know anybody. And I remember they walked through the door and I was like, hey, is that the most beautiful on God's green earth? And he was like, yeah, that's her. And she was like, hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm a model. And we were like, yeah, I know.
Yes,
I know. That's how that works out.
Before we...
Tattoos and marriages.
Going back to stuff, I think like those kind of things, like I've come to appreciate when people are trying to build community. Like there's, you know, when everybody gathers, especially when you're on location, I think it's much easier when you're in the town. Like when you're in LA and everybody's going home to their families, it's really like on House of the Dragon, besides, you know, kind of coming on the tail end of COVID and coming out of that, it was hard because all the cast live there. You know, they go back to their home. It's hard to, but when we were all on location in Portugal, it was great because we're all in the same hotel and we all got to hang out. Yeah. And those opportunities, I think, are important as a creative community. And I know that, you know, when you get busy, when you're busy directing, it's great when somebody is handling that or sort of organizing that or those things are happening. And that sense of community is going on, and it's what actually.
Especially when they're such a jerk that they don't invite you. I'm going to keep apologizing for this for a while.
That's all right.
I also think to your point, Greg.
I'm so sorry.
We've all been on both kinds of shows. I mean, there are shows where it's kind of built into the show where you're going to be spending tons and tons of time together on set, and that could create a sense of family. Hopefully, if it's a healthy group of people. Even if you're going home at night. But a show like Prison Break, for instance, I think that Golden Globes party was certainly the first time I had been in the same room as the entire cast at once. You know, there was no table reads. I think there was a dinner here before we all went to Chicago, here in Los Angeles, that is. But I had not spent time as a group. And so it takes some effort. And yeah, especially on location.
And it was before the very weird Christmas party that Robin and I threw, which was far less successful.
It wasn't amazing.
I disagree. That was amazing.
Exactly, because you weren't there. Wait, before we move on to like fan questions and stuff, which we've got to do in a little bit, but I have a question that I've wanted to ask you for a very long time.
Okay.
And it's about House.
Okay.
So shortly after, I think season 2, I was no longer on the show, I guess I would end up coming back to the show, but I was no longer on the show. And I'm standing at a gas station, filling up my car in Los Angeles, and I get a call from, I think, my reps saying, hey, you have an offer for an episode of House that shoots tomorrow. we kind of need a yes or a no. And I was like, I'm at a gas station. Let me get home and read the thing. And they're like, we really don't have time for that.
Wow. Wow.
Greg Yatanis is directing it. He, you know, gave us your name or whatever. He thinks you're right for this. And I was like, okay, sure. Like, fine. I trust Greg. You know, at this point, we'd done that episode in season two, which hopefully we talk about next season.
Yes.
On this podcast. And we built up a ton of trust. I get home and I read the script. And I was like, what's Greg beef for this? Because it opens with a woman in bed with a man who turns out not to be her husband. And she's in this open relationship. The episode was called Open and Shut. And I read this script and I was like, what Greg sees in me? And I've been wanting to ask you for all these years, like, were you just so desperate? You auditioned every other five at Brunette in LA and you were just like, they were busy?
No,
like,
I mean, there was probably, I think that this happens.
She's in bed with the other man and then her husband knocks on the door and she's like, oh, this is awkward. And I was like, it's Greg being me to do this.
Yeah, you know, here's why. I feel that, you know, there was definitely like a process on House, like you used to have in-person casting. And so you would have those, you'd have like a day of prep was dedicated to casting, which was great. And, you know, we had that experience. And as I'm sitting there in casting and not seeing it, I'm like, Sarah Wayne Callies would be perfect for that. Like, I was like thinking about our experience. I was thinking about what you did with Brother's Keeper, what we had done on the show. And then, you know, plus two, like, I like working with my friends and people I like and getting to, you know, to do it totally again. And when you have that, and, you know, I had Wentworth on House as well. It was, you know, it's fun for me to reunite with someone. And it's, you know, sometimes when you're sitting in casting and you're not finding what you need, you are thinking about other relationships and other things. And, you know, I don't think there's anything I can throw at you that you couldn't do. So
fair enough. That's a very, very polite answer. I'm also grateful to you for introducing me to the David Shore camp, because the first three episodes I directed were all for Good Doctor. So
oh, great.
Many, 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 super, super grateful. But it was a funny, like my agent, when we sat down and read the script, he goes, is there some, why is he thinking about you for this?
It's called, and I was like, acting,
none of your business.
That was,
yeah,
like
I know,
100%.
But I mean,
it's not a polite answer.
You've gotten scripts where you're like, ow, you really want, I'm the, really? You know, I did an episode of I did a few episodes of Letterkenny and I love the show, but like, you know, they wrote me a role for a Mennonite named Anita Dick. And I was like, it's funny the way you appear to people.
I always like when I get something that's like out of my usual wheelhouse, or I'm always like, I'm interested to know why I got the call for it, or why they wanted to sit down with me. I'm as interested as, you know, because that helps me also understand what, you know, again, how to find my way into the material, you know, that somebody saw, you know, I mean, House had more jokes than most, you know, comedies do. So, you know, going to, you know, I did Banshee with Jonathan Tropper. We're reuniting for Your Friends and Neighbors. And again, that has a lot of that kind of drama mixed with, you know, comedic elements of that. Like, you know, that's what he could point to.
For sure.
And I like when I get a call that's like, I'm like, I wouldn't expect to get this piece of material. And then there's the stuff that is very easy math. You know, you've done Big Show with Dragons. You're going to get, you know, this big, crazy logistical
Big Show with
things.
Big Show with Monster, yeah.
Big Show with Monster, yeah. And then there's usually
Marvel will call
like,
you next week.
Yeah, Big Show with Monster that is in trouble and needs, like, somebody to come in and help the show. Right. That is often the frequent.
That's high praise, though.
It is high praise. It is nice to get. So,
but this this is a town. This is a business that likes to niche, because everyone likes a sure thing. So it's like, I know Sarah can play a Mennonite, or somebody in a polyamorous relationship. I know Greg can fix a monster show or a junkie.
Yeah.
It's a quality and a texture to your work that. I'm like, this is going, like, Sarah's going to make this interesting. Like, that's, you know, and so, like, you know, and it probably wasn't the day before it was decided. It was, like, as it went through the, you know, getting David Shore familiar with your work and explaining, you know, doing some of the matrix of things it sometimes comes down to the wire. Plus, too, like, remember everything, like, you know, you had 7 days to prep an episode of House. Like, between having an idea and executing on it, you're practically shooting. So,
Yeah, and I mean, the in-person casting is interesting because now, so often, we come onto an episode and they've, day one of prep, they're like, here are our top 10 people for the following roles, because they've been seeing people before you even sort of show up. And I mean,
I miss it because
there's a real estate issue there.
There is. And like somehow prep, you know, as the shows have gotten bigger, prep has gotten bigger. And, you know, that space, you know, at the Directors Guild, I'm on the negotiating committee and we've tried to bring it back or bring a version of it back or an option for it back. And nobody, it's extremely hard. But what I miss from it in more of my episodic directing days was the ability to kind of use it as like when you found the person that was probably going to be, being able to almost rehearse on the spot there, you know, and be able to like work some of the things and try out ideas there ahead of the day. And you don't, you know, I think Cast It is amazing in that the world has gotten smaller and you can be almost anywhere. And, you know, we found Ant Star for Banshee, like, because, you know, a tape had come in from Australia through New Zealand to us, you know, and it had taken a long time to travel, but it was but because of this remote net that could be cast now, you know, there was more opportunity. But what gets lost is some of the human aspect of it and trying to find that time to do that work.
And notes and somatic connection, you know, I think that's the, I've been directing, it's like sometimes you have, if you have to cast off tape, sometimes you don't know if there's like you said, like a looseness on their feet.
Yeah.
Or whether we speak the same language, which is always a little bit of a risk. Scene, so
the show I just did with Jake, it was his first time doing TV for Presumed Innocent. And he read with anybody he was going to be acting against, like just to be able to, like if we narrowed it down and sort of had a few people and like this who we're thinking of, it would, he wanted to get right on a Zoom and see what, you know, again, to see like, what's that experience going to be like? What happens when I want to, you know, throw it out after three takes and try something totally different? Can they, you know, can they roll? And, you know, by the way, like, great. Like, I loved it. Like, welcomed it, loved this. I think chemistry reads or
it's a great way to work.
Vibe reads, even over Zoom, like, it's better than nothing.
Okay, well, we've got a couple fan questions.
Yeah, we got some fan questions. And then we have one question for you before, well, two questions for you before you go. Yeah.
We have a wrap.
It's our little tradition. But we're going to take a quick break and then we will be right back.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for a dollar. Because saving with deals is always on the menu with new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. We have some fan questions. For Greg, some of these, let's see. So people, we have an Instagram at Prison Break Pod.
I follow it now.
People left some questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. We follow you back.
We follow you back.
So we've got, let's see, Peppy Oliver Bell asked, did any of the characters' backstories change significantly? I think we answered that.
When the first production draft came out to when you're finally shooting, did anything change radically? Like, oh, Sucre wasn't going to hold up.
No, the script held up well. I think you called out sort of the biggest thing, which was the Lincoln, you know, whether Michael slept with Veronica is probably the biggest thing. And I think there was a little more of some flashback. Big flashback to the kids.
Oscaroo.z.1 asks, what's the scene that needed the most takes to get perfect? Uh-huh. To refine that, I think it, what was the, maybe not technically the trickiest scene to shoot, but in terms of getting the relationship, the performance, or the dynamic of the scene right? Do you remember what took the longest or was the hardest, I should say?
I mean, one of the things about network TV was that there isn't time to indulge that. Like if you're really stuck on something, you have to know there's no wiggle room on a day of TV, as you both know. Like it has to come from somewhere else, and it's just a game of minutes. Yeah. And so I remember being concerned about Mike Jones because he was, you know, the only non-actor
in Texas.
Well,
not present in
beyond the fact that he flew in, and we did manage to shoot that day. But it was, but I actually I had wanted to reach out, couldn't get in touch. There was a lot of handling around that. And I remember his website being because I was who's Mike Jones? And then his website is actually who is Mike Jones?
Touché.
And I remember thinking that could be consuming, but he was a total natural. Like he was great. Yeah. And once I got him,
he's great in the show. Yeah,
I mean, Hooks dressed him down for not showing up in Texas. Like I watched that from a distance. Like that was great. Like, and Hooks gave me down.
Which, by the way, a supervising producer is supposed to do. Yeah, like that's what you need your producing director to do.
To Mike Jones' credit, he apologized to everybody. He came to me to apologize. I said, you owe the apology to all the crew that was out till for a 14-hour day on a Friday night, and that was the night that
28
we were doing.
Degree.
Paul in the van, he was cold. But, I thought he was there. And that was actually the area that I thought I was carving out a lot more time for, but didn't turn out to need.
Okay.
All right. Greg.
What about this? Can we do the venomous symbiotes question?
Sure, do it.
If you don't mind. It said, is there a character in the show you would have loved to direct the backstory for you were not able to do in Brother's Keeper? Just curious. There's no Westmoreland. There's no Abruzzi. There's no tweener.
Right.
Like, was there somebody looking back on it?
I mean, I would have,
fans want to know.
Bill Fitchner didn't come in until season two, right?
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. And I remember when I was doing that song, I liked that story, but I think I would have
Mahone.
If there was more foresight to characters that would come in, I would have loved to have had more Easter eggs. You see Peter on a news clipping on the wall, but it would have been fun to
plant
some of the other world building aspects. Like if any of that was known or could have been known at the time, I think that would have been exciting because I obsess on those things as a viewer.
Yeah. Somebody who doesn't show up until season two or three. Yeah, that would have been really
picking
cool.
The tattoos that we were going to see kind of being generated. Oh, like getting, geeking out on that. That was all stuff that I want to see. I picked the tattoos that I wanted to see so that we could plant the future of or things you had already seen that were going on. So you started to understand.
As a viewer and a fan of the show, it is so satisfying.
Yeah,
to get to put all that stuff together.
You got to love the show to do it too.
It's so fun to be in on. There's so much mystery in the show that once it's revealed, to then go get to look back on it and feel like you're in on it.
Yeah,
it's just such a joy, and that's all over this episode.
Yeah.
Greg, this is just it's always a joy to see you, and what a gift to get to talk through this with you. It's been really great. Thank you for being here.
Completely love it.
Remember, everyone, you can subscribe to our Watch Party episodes on the Patreon link on our show page, wherever you're listening right now. And our call-in question of the week, Greg, we have a call-in line because we're pretty old school.
Phone line.
Telephone.
First-time caller, long-time listener.
Yeah, that's right. We want your backstory for characters that are not in this flashback episode. Call in and tell them about Westmoreland, Abruzzi, Tweener. You can go obscure if you want. Danny Hale, Nurse Katie, Avocado. Keep them short, like a haiku version, but please call us at 401-3-P-BREAK. Prison break, not urine. Don't forget, 401-3-P-BREAK. pee break, we play some of our favorites that you call in with down.
Just the letter P.
That looked better.
Just the letter paper. P. Yeah,
it really
it's
does.
A tough one.
It's one of those things you say out loud.
Yeah, okay. 4013PB. Oh my God. 4013PBREAK.
And Greg, okay, we have a little wrap up for our guests here.
By the way, two questions to your point on the P break thing. The initials for House of the Dragon was Hot D, and then everybody just be like, okay, Hot D, or they'd be texting Hot D, you know, and you just
that's amazing.
I would die, and of course I'm like snickering, you know, laughing, but like you know, like
that's amazing. Yeah.
Hot D,
Hot D. Okay, so we have two questions that we wrap up with our guests. The first is, if you were on death row, what would your last meal be?
On death row, it would
be... Don't say Hot D. Or do. I'm not trying to tell you what to do. Live your life, man. I don't judge.
Could definitely be... Probably from Sushi Bark, I would get... You know, the rundown, if I could get that from, if anybody lives in LA, they'll get that. So,
okay. Our first sushi answer. That's great.
Yeah, for sure. That and then drunken whale sake will, I won't feel, I won't be feeling nothing.
There you go. and here's our final. It's a fill in the blank, Greg. And it's comes in the form of advice to our listeners. And the advice is, don't get sent to prison, folks. But if you do get sent to prison, remember to...
You're going to edit the long pause?
Yep.
I wish I had.
Take your time. Take your time.
Repeat the question again. Don't get sent to prison. If you do get sent to prison,
Remember, folks, don't get sent to prison. But if you do get sent to prison, remember to...
Man, brush your teeth. Oral hygiene is critical.
Amazing. If you don't take care of your teeth,
you don't got anything.
You take care of your teeth, they take care of you.
I'm a big believer in oral hygiene.
There you go. Great.
Sage advice from one of the great directors of the American Golden Age of Television, ladies and gentlemen, two-time Emmy winner, Greg Yutainen.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us, friend.
Yeah, it was so great. Good.
Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul is a Caliber Studio production. Your hosts have been friends, but not besties, Sarah Wayne Callies and Paul Edelstein. Our prison warden has been producer Ben Haber. Our head of jailhouse rock is Paul Edelstein, who made the music for this podcast. Keeping us slim and trim in the prison yard has been sound designer and editor, the great Jeff Schmidt. Keeping us up to date on the outside world is production assistant Drew Austin. Our prison artist, logo, and brand designer is John Nunziato and Little Big Brands. Check them out at www.littlebigbrands.com. Follow us on Instagram at Prison Break Podcast. Email us at prisonbreaking@caliber-studio.com and call us at 401-3-PBREAK. Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul has been a Caliber Studio production. Thank you.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.